Welcome back, folks. We check in periodically with Colonel Alex Gann, retired colonel and fighter pilot for the Israeli Air Force, now living in a small village in northern Israel. Colonel, welcome to the show.
Thank you, and good evening or good afternoon to you.
Colonel, I hope you guys are doing well. If you would just briefly tell us the kind of the state of the state as you see it right now.
Wow, it's kind of chaotic. I'll put it this way: we have kind of a gridlock on the Gaza situation, and I think it's dividing the country. And most of the people, most of the population, is for ending the war immediately, returning the hostages, and then dealing with whatever comes after that. The government, who is very right-winged, is actually controlling Netanyahu, has the influence of the government, and they're against it, and this is causing a huge chaos around Gaza. We had a big crisis regarding the food supplies. A lot of it was based on fake pictures, but it doesn't matter. Once this is in the media, and once this is the edifix of the people, then it doesn't matter what you say. This is a very bad situation, and I think it's about time we get over with this whole thing. So it's very problematic, and the most important thing here is now getting the hostages back. It's enough. It's 665 days. And that's way too much. We just had pictures released yesterday of two of the hostages. They are really, really holding to their lives on a very thin thread.
So how does this change, though? I mean, you know, the reality and what's being talked about here in the United States is that the reality is Hamas really is fighting for their identity. They want to be involved in governing Gaza still. The only leverage they have are these hostages. Obviously, the U.S. and Bibi Netanyahu are not in favor of Hamas having any role in the governance of Gaza. So we're kind of
at a gridlock. No one is in favor of Hamas, not even the Arab countries around us.
Right.
They know they're extremists, and they're a danger to everywhere. They're like a kind of a virus, which everywhere they go, they cause chaos and death. So no one wants them to ruin Gaza again. It's a very difficult issue, but we have to put someone instead of them. And this is something which neither us nor the U.S. nor anyone else was willing to take control of Gaza instead of Hamas. And that's when you have this kind of void of governing, then it's chaos. And it was part of our responsibility as a government to take care of this issue and find some identity, maybe even the Palestinian Authority, which no one really likes either. But it's someone that you can talk to and deal with and get someone to rule Gaza on the civilian side. Hamas is not willing also to put their weapon down. And I think we should get with them to kind of some kind of a deal which is close to what we have in Lebanon with Hezbollah. But we have to, we are the stronger side, I would say, military-wise. But today, I think we are on the weaker side, the politically side. You can see now this kind of tsunami with all the countries in over the world. Everyone wants to have to give them a Palestinian state. A Palestinian state to whom? To Hamas, as a kind of a prize for what they did on October 7th. It's complicated, and that's
yeah. That's where I was going to go next, because, you know, Hamas has been guilty of perpetuating one hoax after the next, right? I mean, we can, mm-hmm. You and I have talked about it almost every time. They put these images out. They put this information out. It's not anywhere near the truth. They've continued to do so. Mainstream media in the U.S., in France, in Britain, they've gobbled this up as though it's an absolute truth. And almost every time it's been debunked and showed that it's not anywhere near the truth. They try to make this a very simplistic equation. The complicity of this is second to none. And now, you know, as we get nearer and nearer to what we think could be the end, their support of a two-state solution, making these announcements and these demands on Israel at this point in time, empowers Hamas. And it's not going to encourage Hamas to release these hostages. They're making this situation even worse because they want to satisfy their own. They're not popular in their home country. So they're going to endear themselves to the Palestinians that are in their country by talking about these silly propositions that everyone knows it ain't going to happen. It's not happening. There's not going to be a two-state solution, and Hamas is not going to govern it, right?
Yeah, of course. But, you know, again, the problem with the world today is the truth doesn't matter. What's in the people's head and in the media and on Facebook or Instagram or whatever, that's the truth. And when people look at that, so now I'm sure also all these rallies all over the world of the poor Palestinians are actually backed up by Qatar and Iran money. We know that. And the governments, you know, they're very, you could see it in the statement which the Prime Minister of the UK, where he had to make his statement, you know, after the President of France did it for mostly internal considerations.
Sure.
But once it's out there, what can we do? And then all the countries are run after them. And when you ask him one simple question, okay, what is your suggestion? What should Israel do now? Give us not only what not to do, tell us what yes to do. No one has an answer to that. And that's the main, it's a kind of a catch-22 issue. And we have to break this gridlock. And every day that we hesitate it's more complicated, because now Hamas, what you just yesterday said, okay, I'm not going back even to negotiations until there's enough food for everybody, because he grabs the food and sells it. He makes a lot of money. So what are we going to do about that? You know. So
and meanwhile, the UN is insisting that Hamas be the deliverer of the aid, because
the UN insists that it will be the delivering of the aid, the UN. But when we show that there are 900 trucks and thousands of tons of food waiting for the UN to get them into Gaza, and they don't do it because they don't have the logistics to back it. So again, we're to blame. But what can we do about it? Because the UN knows, because the UN collaborates with Hamas. Many people in Hamas, we used to be UN workers, and the UN is trying to, you know, to hide it. But again, it's so complicated, and again, we're in the mud, and every time in quicksand, every movement you sink deeper. And we have to break this gridlock. I think there's no choice, with one big move, get this whole thing over, whatever the cost would be, and then we can deal with Hamas. That's personally, I think that's
what is the prevailing thought right now in Israel? So everybody recognizes this political, you know, foreign policy game that's being played by these leaders that are complicating this equation.
Their thought is, you know, they go always to this very simple saying, you're anti-Semitic, et cetera, et cetera. It's not from there. The problem is that this government is such a bad government. We have never had such a really bad, low-managed, and terrible government. And they don't want to go to elections because they know once there are elections, they're out of a job, most of them. So they're sticking and gluing their ass to the seat and refusing to everything. And actually, I would say a lot of the blame is on our government. In our government, most likely, it's Bibi Netanyahu, because he doesn't stand up against the right-wing ministers who are refusing to any compromise, who want to conquer back Gaza, who want to settle back again in Gaza, which is a really terrible idea. And it won't be simple. You know, when everybody, I'm considered to be the optimistic thinker, and many people come to ask me what will happen. I say, you know, at the end, we are a strong nation, we'll build up, but every day when we go down the hill, it will take us a week to go up. So if it's 600 days down, it will take us 600 weeks to climb, which means we have 10 or 12 years ahead of us of hard labor in building up the country. Maybe we'll do it faster than that. Because it's surprisingly that the economy is doing fairly well. And for instance,
but as it relates to Gaza, is there a mindset that history tends to repeat itself? Israel got out of Gaza, gave it, you know, the Palestinians were in control. They decided, you know, one way or the other, whether reluctantly or they were forced to or whatever, to turn it over to Hamas. You know, and when you have undercurrent is that, you know, we want to kill Jews, whether you're a member of Hamas or you're a member of the Palestinian population. How do you deal with that? I mean, that's the thing I can't square up in my head.
That's Gaza has been, I would say, a thorn in the country since 2,000 years ago. There have always been conflicts with Gaza. And when we left Gaza, it wasn't the first time we left Gaza. We conquered part of Gaza in 48 and then in 56 and then in 67. And when we gave it back in 1980, the Anwar Sadat, the president of Egypt, knew very well why he didn't want Gaza back. He said, no, thank you. I know who these people are. Leave them on their own. And it's a problem, you know, but many, many people in Gaza worked in Israel and we had good relations with them and we're hoping to build a future together. But the extremists, Hamas, when they took over in 2006 with violence and shooting all over, everybody's afraid of them. They control the country and when you read the books, which they educate the kids, you understand where Gaza is going. It's a very sad story. Now Gaza today, it looks like Hiroshima. There's nothing to build Gaza back. It will be very costly. What I think it's part of building Gaza back is part of the whole process. Once we make a deal with them, once again, you want to build Gaza back, it's without Hamas. It cannot be with Hamas. You want to do, you can live, you can work for it, but you can't. No one will give them the funds to do that. And this is the only way I believe they will change their way of thinking. But again, it's all about force. It's all about honor. When you look now what's happening in Syria and the way the people there act and how they kill each other without a blink of an eye, the Western world doesn't understand that at all. The Western world, you know, is quite naive about this problem with the rising of the extreme Islam. And as long as it doesn't knock on your door, you feel safe. You say, it's okay. But one day it knocks on your door. And for us, it's been knocking on the door for 77 years now. And we know exactly what we're dealing with. Also, the people of the kibbutzim near Gaza, which were murdered and kidnapped on the 7th of October, these people were most pro-Gaza in the world. They were helping them, and they were giving them aid and teaching them and driving them to the Israeli hospitals and whatever, and then they come back and they kill them, and they rape them and they murder them. So this is what we're dealing with. What can we do? It's our destiny to fight Gaza for many, many years to come, and as long as we understand that, we haven't got much of a choice.
You said something right? earlier that is so disappointing. You know, I like to deal in reality, right? And I think this, and I always divide things up into unpleasant truths and comforting lies. And, you know, there are a lot of unpleasant truths here that we have to deal with. But when the truth doesn't matter anymore, and I think you're spot on when you said that, mm-hmm. You know, we're moving these things in directions that potentially, I don't know that we ever recover from. I don't know that Israel ever recovers, or Gaza, or the Palestinians ever recover from.
I think, you know, Israel, I think you're right. It's kind of frustrating. But once you understand that, and you say, okay, this is something, like, you know, a person wakes up in the morning, and he goes to the doctor, and he finds out he has cancer, and now he has to fight it. It's a new reality which you have to face. It's not pleasant, but if you will imagine that, no, it will go away tomorrow and you wake up, it doesn't help usually. So you have to pull yourself together and get a good government and a good leadership. And there are very good people here and very talented people. And eventually, once we get this government out of the way, I believe we will start climbing out of this situation. If we don't, then we're doomed.
Yeah. Well, I always thought the easiest way is that the international community would coalesce and they would try to checkmate the UN and do the right thing, deal with the truth of the matter, resolve it. But it feels like we're going in the opposite direction.
You're going yeah. in the opposite direction because, you know, it's not politically correct to say that the so-called weaker side, the poor people of Gaza, they can't be wrong because they're suffering so much. They can't be wrong. You have to pity them and you have to help them. Now, I don't say you don't have to help them, but you have to put it in proportion. You have to put it for a cost. You have to put it in a way that they know they have to change their ways. The Palestinian people of Gaza, and some of them in the West Bank, they never supported themselves as a nation. They always got money from the outside, from the Arabs, from the richer Arab countries, from Europe, from Israel, from wherever. They did not support themselves as a nation. But they always cry that everybody else is to blame, and they are the poor on the poor side of the equation. That's if they're poor side. It's like, you know, when you have a little brother who disturbs you and bothers you and, I don't know, gives you hell, and once you give him a smack, he runs to his mother, and you're to blame. And that's life.
Well, but when your primary motivation is retaliation, getting even, and, you know, we're going to show them kind of point of life, and that's their reality. And, you know, you get all this money and you build tunnels. You don't feed your own people. You don't promote an economy. You don't advance education. You're building tunnels and buying guns. I mean, that speaks
volumes.
That's why I think.
Look, what happened now in Gaza, and also in Lebanon, and also in Syria, and also in Iran, but mainly in Gaza, the amount of retaliation which Israel poured on them in destruction. And is unbelievable. And this is the language they understand. You know, they get up every morning and they sleep in a tent. And if they're lucky to have a tent. And they get up in the, and they get up the next morning and they go beg for food. This is something I don't think they'll forget. But I think the world has to also recognize that it's not only retaliation. It's something which must be followed by a culture change and a governing change. You know, when Gaza was handed over to in 2005 to the Palestinians, there were plans to build Gaza and make it into the next Singapore, and everybody was willing to invest money in there, et cetera, et cetera. And look what happened to them.
Yeah.
It's their fault.
It's going to be interesting. I pray for you guys every day, Colonel.
Thank you.
You know, I know. It's absolutely mystifying to me where this is headed most recently. It's frustrating. And I can't, you know, I can't even imagine what it's like for you guys. But thank you so much for joining us and sharing your story.
Thank you very much for your support and for having me and giving the chance to explain to you what you're doing for us and what's happening over here. So good evening and thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Stay safe. That's Colonel Alex Gann, retired colonel and fighter pilot for the Israeli Air Force, now living in a small village in northern Israel. We will be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us.